thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Oh, I got a lot today.
Here's John Williams.
I got about three big thoughts today, and I don't know why I just called Ryan Sam. I think I do, actually. Sam Panionovich is going to join us on the show today.
Lord have mercy.
He talks sports, but we're not going to ask him about the NFL necessarily, not the big flag controversy. More about the teams he's picking and a couple of other sports topics we spend a little time on Mondays to recap the weekend and how he's doing in the pool that we're following. He could become a millionaire if he continues to pick games as successfully as he has been this season. We'll also visit with Diana Enriquez. Her book is A First-Class Catastrophe. It's about the worst day in the history of Wall Street, and that is October 19th, 1987. When the Dow fell what today would be in a single day the equivalent of 5,000 points, it fell 500. But as a percentage, it would be the same today as if the Dow fell 5,000 points. Imagine if tomorrow your 401k was depleted by 22%. That happened in one single solitary day in October of 1987. You probably remember a little bit about that. We're going to talk to her about that, what we should have learned then, and have we learned it now? She's a great author. She wrote about Bernie Madoff famously in The Wizard of Lies, and she'll be in our studio in the 2 o'clock hour. Obviously, everybody is talking about and concerned today, not about nuclear Armageddon, but about the NFL. Thanks a lot, President Trump. This was beautiful days in September are a gift. They are to be cherished. And there we were with the nicest weekend of the year, and the President of the United States has to ruin it for everybody with Twitter. People were at the lake, they were boating, they were swimming, kids were playing soccer, baseball, football, packages, boxes, and bags. There's so many wonderful things going on this weekend, and everybody's walking around with this squinched face. How do you feel about patriotism and the flag? Really? You couldn't give us this weekend? No. No, he had to set off a Twitter storm for reasons I still don't understand. And then, amazingly today, the governor of Illinois said, "I strongly disagree with those who disrespect our flag and anthem," as if we wondered what Bruce Rauner was thinking. Listen, if you don't want to wade into this morass, do not. There is no upside. Because if all the people in your state or in your stadium or in the stands at your NASCAR race, they're going to be there for you. You don't need to do this. But if you do this, then some of them are going to be upset and they may go away. I do not see the upside on this. Not that that's the reason to avoid important conversations, but I don't know that we need to be having this conversation. Colin Kaepernick is unemployed right now anyway. We don't need to have this conversation. Okay, back to Bruce Rauner, but he decided this would be a good time to maybe for the first time in his elected life really jump into something. So why does he jump in? Well, he's a part owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I didn't know that. I'm a recent transplant. I suppose you did.
No.
So he said this: "I strongly disagree with those who disrespect our flag and our anthem. To me, they are disrespecting the foundations of our country, the veterans who risk their lives for our democracy, and the men and women who fight every day and make the ultimate sacrifice. I personally cannot and will not condone such behavior. That said, our country is great because it guarantees freedom of expression so people can choose to be disrespectful." What? What was that last part? He said, "I personally cannot and will not condone such behavior." If you're an owner of an NFL team and you do not want to condone such behavior, that means you can fire the employees that are disrespecting the flag. He just said that. "I cannot and will not condone such behavior. That said, our country is great because it guarantees freedom of expression, so people can choose to be disrespectful." Well, then why did you say that? So which is it? Which is it, Bruce Rauner? You just said it's disrespectful and it undermines the foundations of our country, but you're cool with that? If you're going to let me do that, that's fine? Well, that's the biggest mealy-mouth bunch of mush I've ever heard. If that's what you want to say, don't even say it. You're back to square one again. Either say, "I support these people and I'm going to lock arms with them," or "I'm going to fire the bunch of SOBs because I disagree with them." But to say, "Well, I really don't like what you guys are doing, but you get to do it anyway," is not exactly courageous or advances the ball. And if there's anything that's a consequence of this, I think it's that people are going to, he's going to catch heat for it. Now, some people are going to pat him on the back and say, attaboy, that was tough stand, big boy. But I think that that's not really necessary, and I don't think it's the popular opinion. And sure not mine. Sure not mine. So let's see if I've got my head around this right. Colin Kaepernick felt that police have unfairly treated African Americans. So he started taking a knee during the national anthem at San Francisco 49ers games. Other players, some, not many, followed suit. Kaepernick no longer works or plays in the NFL. President Trump spoke at a rally in Alabama. And last week he said that if a player takes a knee, then the owner should bench the SOB. He went on to tweet, quote, if a player wants the privilege of making millions of dollars in the NFL or other leagues, he or she should not be allowed to disrespect our great American flag or country and should stand for the national anthem. If not, big letters now, you're fired. Find something else to do. And then he tweeted about how proud he is First Lady Melania Trump. And then he tweeted, if you follow the scroll, that Iran had fired a ballistic missile and mocked the agreement the United States has with North Korea. Two tweets later, he called Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man again and then threatened that North Korea, quote, won't be around much longer. A short while ago, by the way, you've probably heard North Korea has announced that that was a declaration of war and that they would now shoot down U.S. bombers even in international airspace. That just happened. This is going to be, someone said over the weekend, the stupidest Armageddon ever. Back to Sunday. After the North Korea tweet, Donald Trump then fired off 8 tweets about the NFL and one about health care. His Sunday Twitter rant included an exclamation to Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, about players who kneel. Tell them to stand, exclamation point. He urged fans to boycott NFL games until all of the players do so. He said the ratings for the NFL games are down because the games are boring and because fans love our country. Once the games got started on Sunday, he interpreted correctly, maybe, I'm not sure, the players who stood during the national anthem with their arms interlocked as solidarity for our country. He cheered that the Pittsburgh Penguins of the NHL were coming to the White House and that they were, quote, a great team. He retweeted a suggestion that Americans boycott the NFL. He then tweeted that the NFL should change its policy, presumably to force players to stand. And then he tweeted that his number one priority is to make America safe by keeping out dangerous foreigners. So he was just on a roll. This is a guy who doesn't drink, by the way. I mean, really, he is sober tweeting these things. He has since applauded how...
Is that a phrase, sober tweeting?
I know.
I know there's drunk tweeting, but...
The only way to explain it is these are sober tweets. He has since applauded how NASCAR and its fans won't put up with disrespecting our country or flag. They said it loud and clear. He has also stated that this is not about race, but about patriotism, and he has started the hashtag stand for our anthem. All of this, to me, leaves some questions still on the table. Question number one, who else should be fired if they disrespect the flag? Is this a penalty just for professional athletes? Think about that. Professional athletes disrespect the flag, and therefore they should be fired. So is it only professional athletes that should be so penalized? Does context count? That is, if a protest during the anthem is about police brutality, if a protest during the anthem is about threats to the First Amendment, can a protest be seen as not un-American, but about a cause? Players locked arm in arm standing during the anthem. I don't know what that means. You may care to tell me.
Don't you think that was NFL solidarity together? You know, because remember, the president also ripped the NFL, said they're ruining the game when it came to concussion protocols and things like that.
Right.
So I just think this was the we will not be bullied.
Right, and making the game more dangerous or...
Yeah, not necessarily about taking a knee, but about, you know, you telling us what to do and, yeah, being bullied by the president.
Well, I think it was very interesting. It was a very Rahner statement, wasn't it? I mean, I shouldn't say that because I think it's pretty clear what the governor thinks about that. When I saw those guys standing with their arms locked, the Chicago Bears, for instance, It was not clear to me what they were saying. I think the interlocking of arms means unity, and if it's unity on the NFL, then it's probably against the president. But the president saw that as a show of patriotism.
Yeah, the president seemed to think that was pro him, which I don't think it. I mean, you know, it started, the day started with the
or
owner.
Or pro patriotism, yeah.
The day started with the in London with the owner of the Jaguars interlocking his arms with
right.
the players on the field.
Right.
So I think that was, you know, you're not going to drive a wedge between the owner, between me as an owner and the players, you know, the SOBs.
Yeah, sure. But do you think it would have made a different statement if the Bears did that on a knee rather than standing?
I think the knee was a different protest. The knee was, you know,
police brutality.
Yeah, more of a Kaepernick sort of statement. The interlocking. There's so many statements flying around right now.
No, but I think this is an interesting point because what the players, I think, were saying today, what Stevie Wonder was saying over the weekend, was not what Colin Kaepernick was saying, but they were saying that Colin Kaepernick has the right to say it. I mean, if it's not about, say, the concussion protocol in the NFL, but about free speech, to me, the only topic on the table over the weekend was freedom of expression, that we ought to be allowed to say what we want when and where we want to say it.
Okay, and I would put that in the interlocked arms category.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
By the way, I also, you know, this won't be popular, but I don't know if I'm ready to say that kneeling or genuflecting or taking a knee at the national anthem is necessarily disrespecting the flag.
Yeah.
I mean,
why?
It.
Because that's a prayerful pose?
Well, there's you're still participating. You are still observing. You're not turning your back on the flag.
You're not spitting.
You're not spitting. You're not, you know, you're not doing anything like that. You still are part of it. You're just setting yourself apart a bit by kneeling to make a statement.
Well, I think if you go to where this first came from, Colin Kaepernick, it was clear. And it was hurtful to a lot of people, right?
But didn't he start by sitting and then realize that that might be
not getting it done?
Well, or,
oh no, oh right,
no. I thought that was maybe was
too
disrespectful.
Dismissive. Yeah,
disrespectful.
Right. Sure.
So he decided instead to genuflect.
Yeah, but again, I think that the and fair enough, Steve. But I think a more interesting point to me today is that those players weren't even saying that we stand with Colin Kaepernick.
No.
They're not getting involved in that protest or the way he conducted it. They're simply saying you cannot say that a prerequisite for our working is to show patriotism to the flag
right.
when we feel we have a genuine reason to offer some kind of protest.
Right, I think that's right.
That's as American as as what the soldiers fought for. I'm sorry, if you are the son or daughter or the husband, the father, the mother of somebody who is fighting for our rights in this country, words cannot express how much we all appreciate that. But you have to accept that one of the rights they fought for was the freedom of expression and the right to protest.
And I would imagine most parents and most people do.
I mean, think they get it.
You're seeing a lot of veterans coming out in support. You know, I mean, the flag is not a war banner. It's not a military banner. It represents all of us all of the time. It's about what this country is and stands for, not in battle.
Besides.
But on the street corner, right?
Sure. Well, is it a prerogative for everybody to love this country? What if in fact, somebody said, no, I actually don't like America. I don't like America right now. Some people said that Michelle Obama said as much when she said, this is the first time I felt this proud for this country. So is it okay for an NFL athlete or a talk show host or an average citizen, is it okay for you or I to say, wait a minute, I'm not happy with the United States of America, and I do not love this country today, and I am now going to say that. Is that all right? Because that is very much part of this conversation. And if you had to prioritize, would you say that respect for the flag trumps freedom of speech? Because that's what I'm hearing. Huh. Well, our phone lines are ringing. Well, here's what we're going to do. I'll pause. We'll take some calls. You can text to 312-981-7200 or call that number. Also, in the next half hour, Ruth Major is a labor lawyer in town. And I am intrigued by the notion that the owners do have the right to fire the players for these expressions. She'll kind of walk us through the rules, the law, and the Constitution in the next half hour. It's 1:24. Lots of phone calls and texts about this. We'll just sprint through a few. We'll talk to Bert. This is John. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Bert. You're on the air.
Hey, I don't remember anybody complaining when people are wearing the American flag, which is the most disrespectful thing that they can do to the American flag. Nobody ever complains about that. Nobody complains like when you're at a football game, you know, when they lay out the flag across the field, the big flag
that lays
flat.
Yeah.
Also, very disrespectful.
That violates the official flag code of the United States.
Always should be held vertical.
Yeah.
Nobody ever complains about that. You know, all this and people wearing clothes with the American flag, so disrespectful. It's just like ridiculous, and nobody complains about that. But you know what I think about President Trump is like horrible. To call another human being, another American citizen that is expressing his First Amendment right, calling him such a SOB, that is such a horrible person.
Particularly coming from the president, who's, you know,
right,
really should be such a leader.
Tenfold, right.
Yeah. And should be about the Constitution. You make some interesting points. I appreciate the phone call. I looked up the U.S. Code of Flags today, or Flag Code. You're never supposed to display it horizontally. No, listen to this. This is the truth. Nobody more violates the code of flag etiquette than the National Football League and its member teams. That they cite some athletes for taking a knee during the flag is only a little ironic, because it shouldn't be on your helmet. It shouldn't be a patch on your sleeve. It shouldn't be displayed horizontally on the field. It's not supposed to be used for commercial purposes. If you have a Made in America Great Again hat and you have a flag on there and you're selling that to raise money for your campaign, that violates the United States. It's not unenforceable. There's no penalty. It's not law, but it is an official code drawn up by the United States, and all of those violate the flag etiquette code.
We allow ourselves to get so exercised by these things.
We do.
You know, and it's just, if you just let them protest and go on, it'll be over. And, you know, I sent you that story where the NFL was paid millions and millions of dollars by the Department of Defense during the Obama years for those sort of pregame tributes to the military.
Those are paid for advertising.
It was a recruiting tool. So when we're cheering some of these, you know, sailors or Marines who fought these heroes, the teams were being paid to have those people on the field.
Okay, so fair enough then. So really where the teams are being patted on the back, isn't it great that they celebrate these young men and women? Actually, they're just taking money under the table for that. That's an ad for the Army.
It's above the table.
It's above the table, yeah. But it wasn't much known until a couple of years
ago.
And
the Army in our government is paying for those.
We're giving money to those billionaire team owners so that
patriot,
they can.
That faux kind of, or created patriotism.
Okay, but that you said faux, and you may want to back that back.
I did. I took it back. I said, created. It was created.
You said faux, and then you
and
didn't
then
take
I,
it
then
back.
Then I changed it.
I came in there. I don't think you took it back.
I just said faux or created, and you were talking over me. Give me no respect.
So, at the end of the day, it is about intent, right? Like, I think the people in the stands and the young men and women on the field or on the ice before a Blackhawks game, they really do feel patriotic, even if money is being exchanged. It really, or even if the flag horizontally on the field violates some code that you and I don't know that
right.
well, the intent is patriotic.
Remember, was it Jim Craig in the Olympics of 1980, the goalie for the U.S. hockey team?
Yeah, wanted to wear it on his mask.
Skating, well, he's skating around the ice with the flag draped around him. Olympians do that all the time.
Yeah.
Love it then.
Well, we're not supposed to do that because it violates the code. I think that similarly, though, you cannot judge the love of country or patriotism of the athletes that take a knee. Oh, really, they took a knee so they don't love America as much as you do? Maybe they love it more and are willing to suffer for it because they may lose their jobs now, but they so strongly feel about your First Amendment that they're putting their careers on the line. That, to me, is a love of country. So any more than you can judge somebody walking into a church and think you know their heart, do I think you can know someone's patriotism or love of country by how they act on the sideline of an NFL game? They may love the country more than you or less than you. It's such a vague arbiter anyway. We can't know. But do they have the right to do that? Should they be fired for that? Come on. It's 1:32. We'll pause here. In the next half hour, a labor lawyer talks to us about, okay, so all that notwithstanding, should they have the right to fire you? Lots of calls and texts. We'll get to those after the news on WGN. I'm John Williams. So we invited Ruth Major into our studio, too. And Ruth, I'll ask you to take some calls with us. She's an employment lawyer for a major law firm. That's you,
That's
Ruth Major.
Correct.
So you are a labor lawyer representing which side?
Well, I'm primarily employment lawyer, and I handle almost exclusively employees.
Get a little closer to the microphone.
Okay.
So do employers have the right to fire an employee if the employee is not sufficiently patriotic?
Well, in most states, employees are employed at will. So if it's not a violation of a statute and there's no statute that would provide protection to an employee in a private setting, somebody who works for a private employer, there's no law that would prevent somebody from getting terminated for not being patriotic.
So the answer is they can do that.
They can do it, yes.
They can
that. I don't know every 50 states, every municipality, but I would be surprised if there was a law that protected employees from being terminated for not being patriotic.
Somebody told me today that all 50 states are at-will states, that you can fire somebody without cause if you want to. Unless they have a contract that otherwise protects them, you can fire somebody anytime you want, for any reason you want.
Yes, except there are some statutes. For example, you can't terminate somebody because of their race, their religion, protected activities,
sure,
like reporting illegal activities. But other than the statutory protections, if there's no contract that protects you, you can be terminated for any reason.
Sure, so I can't fire you because you're black, and
That's
I don't
correct.
Like blacks, but I can fire a black athlete because they protest during the national anthem.
That's correct.
That's kind of amazing to a lot of us, though. I think you think that if anything celebrates this country, it's the freedom of speech. And even though we don't always like the exercise of it, we all know that we have to protect it. We're all going to live and die by the flag and the First Amendment together. So if I decide to exercise that First Amendment right, a right, you can fire me for that. I just want to be clear about that. Your employer can fire you for doing that.
That's correct. There are a lot of limitations on free speech in the workplace. You know, you can't, for example, you can't make negative comments to customers about your employer. You can't make offensive comments to people that come into your workplace, customers or coworkers.
Sure.
You know, the courts and the legislature are trying to balance the interest of the employer and the interests of the employee. An employee can exercise their free speech outside.
But when Trump first made that comment over the weekend that they should fire these people, I think a lot of us said, no, wait, you can't do that. We have a constitutional amendment. We have protections. While we do have a constitutional amendment, we do have the First Amendment to the Constitution. Tell me if this is also true. Nobody's keeping you from speaking. You are able to exercise your First Amendment right. You can take a knee. And then as an employer, I can do something about it. I have the right to fire you as well. So I guess that's the bitter pill that some of these people are going to have to swallow if they want to do that.
That's exactly right, as long as it's a private employer. And in this case, and maybe we'll talk about that a little later, but there is a contract. So then
right, so the NFL and the players' union have a contract.
Right.
Individual players have contracts, then there's the collective bargaining agreement. My understanding is that most of the player contracts say that they have to sort of maintain a certain level of decorum. They can't embarrass the league. Baseball famously has that clause. WGN Radio has that clause. If I run nude down Michigan Avenue again, then they would have cause to fire me just because they think that reflects badly on the radio station.
That's correct. Except they're in like, for example, in the one of the players' contracts that I looked at, it does use the word reasonably. And that's Section 11 of the NFL player contract. So there is some standard there. It's not purely at the discretion of the employer. It does have to be reasonable.
Okay, let me read from paragraph 11. I want to see if this is the individual contracts. All players have to sign language that regards their skill, performance, and conduct. And paragraph 11 stipulates that the team can terminate a player's contract. This was in Sports Illustrated today. If the player has engaged in personal conduct reasonably judged by the club to adversely affect or reflect on the club. So if the club decides that your behavior reflects badly on us, we can fire you, right?
That's correct, but it does.
And that's the NFL union's contract with the league.
Well, I believe this is the...
A player contract.
Yes, a player contract. But it does say some contracts will give it completely to the discretion of the employer. This does have language that it has to be reasonably judged to be. So there is a reasonable element.
So how reasonable is this?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, it depends on this goes to an arbitrator or a court. The fact finder would have to determine whether they think this was reasonable basis.
Well, the league could sure say, and the president is asserting, that the disrespectful behavior of the players is hurting the revenue of the league because ratings are down. I don't know how you necessarily prove that, but at least coincident to that is the fact that the ratings are down and the players have been protesting. They did last year. So they could say one is causing the other.
I believe so. If they can,
can say that.
Yes.
Do you think that's the case?
I would have no idea, but I do. I mean, my understanding, what I've seen, is there are a fair amount of people that do seem to be upset by players like not coming out like the Steelers did yesterday.
Yeah, but that was before the ratings went down. The ratings have been down. So why are they down? And Trump says it's because of this. And the teams could say, you guys are hurting our bottom line. You have to stand. It's hurting our bottom line when you guys take a knee during the game. I mean, you're working for the company. If you're hurting like you just said, mm-hmm. You can't say bad things about the store if you're working the cash register. We'll fire you for that.
Right.
It's hurting revenue.
Right.
So this would be the position of the owners, right?
Right, exactly. So it's hard. I don't know what the owners have done, if the owners have expressed concerns to the players or if the players, the owners are supporting it. If the owners support what's going on, then there's no issue.
Well, here's a real funny thing. Okay, so now Trump's got this ball rolling. Now we all got to deal with it. Suppose then the owners, and NASCAR has done this. NASCAR has said, we will fire, at least some team owners have said, we will fire drivers who do not respect the flag before the race. So if a team started to fire some of its players who took a knee, I wonder if that would hurt the team even more. I mean, it may hurt that they are doing it, but if you start firing players who take a knee during the game or lock their arms, then they will stay away. Then they will have hell to pay.
Right. Well, you risk losing the favor with players and players not signing with you again or not being interested in your team. You also risk losing some of your fan base.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, some might like it, some might not like it.
It's 1:49. Okay, so Ruth is in our studio. All our phone lines are busy. You can ask some questions ever next on WGN. So today we have in our studio a labor lawyer named Ruth Major. She practices in Chicago. She represents, you said, you've actually worked on both sides of the aisle,
I have, right.
And so we're just talking about whether or not an employer has the right to fire an employee if you don't like what they say or do, even if it includes the employer judging that the employee is not sufficiently patriotic. A lot of you have questions or comments about this. We'll start with Jan. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Jan. You're on the air.
Hi, John and Ruth. I'm just... child of the 60s, remembering the flag being burnt in the streets, wondering if we're going to make it through. And at least with the protests that they're giving in the NFL, it's a protest to make you think of what we have to do to make the world a better place. It's a quiet protest. It makes you stop and think and leads to discussions like this that will lead to a better world.
Yeah, I hope so. That's taking the high road, Jan, and I really appreciate that. And, you know, she makes an interesting point. I think Steve was kind of alluding to this earlier, too. I mean, this is a fairly benign form of protest. It's reverential in a way. Imagine if they were burning the flag. In principle, I would be here still having to defend it, but it would be so much harder to defend. This conversation would be much more acrimonious if, in fact, they had done something other than lock arms or take a knee. Don't you agree?
Right, right. It's in terms of a protest during the national anthem, this is probably one of the least, or, you know, it's not an offensive gesture that they're doing.
In and of itself. Joyce, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Oh, I have to agree with Jan. you know, this protest has nothing to do with our flag. It has nothing to do with our anthem. It has to do with our Bill of Rights. All men are created equal and should be treated as such. Somehow we lost the original purpose of this protest. The anthem, the flag have nothing to do with it, the job of football or the sport of football.
You know, let me ask you this. Let me ask all of you this. I have long wondered why we turn pro sporting events into super patriotic displays. You know, we're going to play the World Series here, and in the seventh inning, they'll stop the game and sing another patriotic song. We do the national anthem, and we'll do God Bless America in the seventh inning again. And it's completely incongruous. It has nothing to do with the sport. And I'm not exactly sure that we need to super patriotize the NFL and the NBA and college football. We're all good Americans. Right. And if you're not, you still ought to be able to enjoy the game.
This whole controversy is hypocrisy at its utmost.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us. We're out of time for this half hour. But just to be clear, Ruth, so the NFL has contracts with individual players and then a collective bargaining agreement. You've looked at a little of that, as have I today. And it sure does look like, doesn't it, that the NFL has the right to fire the employees, right? Or a team does.
That's correct. There's no protection under the First Amendment for the employees from termination by a private employer like the NFL or the football teams themselves. But their contracts will determine what their protections are. And if they can be terminated at the discretion of the team for engaging in conduct that the team determines is not in the best interest of the business,
right,
then that would be a basis for termination.
And most of us live with that hanging over our heads, that our employers, with some exceptions, I can't fire you because you're Jewish and the federal government has different rules for federal employees, but by and large, most of us work in an environment, including the NFL players, that if I don't like what you're doing, including exercising your First Amendment, I can't fire you.
Right. Most of us actually have fewer rights than the football players because they at least have, it has to at least be some sort of conduct that is damaging to the team.
And they can catch a ball going at a full sprint.
Say it again, Steve.
The owners aren't going to cut football players who are going to lessen their chances of winning.
Well, that's why Colin Kaepernick isn't working, right? If he was Tom Brady, a team would have hired him. Colin Kaepernick you can avoid because he's not the best quarterback in the NFL. If he were a better player, I think plenty of teams would have hired him by now.
Well, they argue he's on the fringe, so he might have suffered. You know, he might have been signable had he not had this toxin around him.
But talk about courage of your convictions. The players are willing to, you know, they're putting their careers on the line. Are the employers willing to put their financial interest on the line? Like, let's see the Pittsburgh Steelers fire some players now because they don't like what they did. It's going to hurt their chances, and the fans are going to like the team less without their favorite players. But if the Pittsburgh Steelers are so principled, then yes, they should fire these players. Let's see them do that. No team has fired a player yet. Ruth, thanks for coming into our studio. We'll call on you again.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's nice to meet you, Ruth Major. It's 158. This is WGN.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
You thought I was...
Here's John Williams.
You jump in there, didn't you? It's 208. This is John. In fact, I thought I was too. I got distracted. I'm reading something I'm about to share with you. Lord, have mercy. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We are coming up on the 30-year anniversary of the worst day in stock market history, and the year was 1987. It's an amazing story. We'll tell it to you when Diana Enriquez comes into our studio. She wrote the Bernie Madoff book, brilliant financial writer, and she'll be in our studio. We're looking forward to that. Here's a quote for you. As an American, I feel strongly about this country, its values, and our shared rights. I know some disagree with me, and while I will not back down on what I said over the weekend, I apologize for using a phrase to describe some members of the NFL. I should not have said that. Close quotes, the president has not said, and almost surely will not, in the next few minutes. But, think of all of the sins, all of the ills that would cure if he just said that. It would be simple.
So he didn't say
that. He did not say that. But, I mean, I just wrote that, and it was very easy to write and very easy to say. For me? Why is that hard for him to say? I mean, we all know, really, just think about that. I know you feel that way, and he feels this way. The governor feels one way, and you feel that way. This is America, and it's messy. But when you resort to that kind of name-calling, well, then you've changed the nature of the debate. And you're the president of everybody, even the SOBs.
Hey, it got him to his new house.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know that it did. Maybe that did.
What do you mean?
You mean that crass, sort of politically incorrect language?
Yeah.
Well, I
mean, it's. The
I don't think that got him. I don't think that got him to where he is. Do you?
Well, it's the way he communicates his persona. He won the election.
Yeah, I guess so. It's 2:10. The president is speaking, though. He does have some sort of event today, and then the media will get a chance to ask questions. I think we know what they're going to talk about in this half hour. If some news breaks there, we'll break in. Meanwhile, our friend Sam Panionovich is on a phone. Hey, Sam, this is John. Where are you?
I am at the United Center right now. Actually, the Advocate Center, getting ready to go in for Bulls Media Day, baby.
That's right. I forgot. It's Bull. Hey, everybody. It's Bulls Media Day.
Is the parking lot full?
It actually is full. Yeah. Dwayne Wade's not here. He got bought out last night. So
that's right.
Dwayne Wade experience is over.
Well, I suppose we'll all be okay with that. He's gave up a lot of money. Didn't he say I'll even take $8 million? He's going to lose $8 million, right?
But he still gets 16 and not play a game. I think that's pretty good math.
So the crowd may be a little bit bigger there because people are, in fact, wondering what any NFL, NBA, you know, any major league franchise has to say today, besides, you know, their interest in the team itself. Are you expecting some quotes about the president coming out of this thing, Sam?
I don't know about any of the players because it's such a young roster, and I don't think they've been, you know, given the green light to say whatever they want. They're not like LeBron James type players, Steph Curry type players. This is a really young roster. I imagine, though, somebody will ask either John Paxson or Gar Forman about it, but I imagine we'll have some language there. But I would not expect any of these young players to say anything political.
Well, if they dodge it, I'm okay with that. You know, really. I mean, I feel this way about stores, NFL teams, and players themselves. And this is a conversation you don't have to have. If you choose to engage in it, I support your right to say what you want to say and feel what you feel. But I won't blame them if they take a knee on this.
I think that's why Mike Tomlin looked like one of the smartest guys in the country yesterday, right?
Who's Mike Tomlin?
The coach of the Steelers.
Oh, yeah, for not sending him out to the field at all.
He said, look, I want to protect the people who do want to protest, and I want to protect the people who don't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they should be forced to make a stand here, so we're all going to stay in the locker room.
It's funny. It's a funny calculus, though, isn't it, Steve? Because I think not going out for the anthem was disrespectful. I mean, it was as disrespectful as, you know, taking a knee, locked arms with your teammates.
Well, unless you understood or heard him explain why they did it.
Uh-huh. No, I just watched TV, and I judge that to be disrespectful.
Well, there it is.
So, Sam Panionovich is involved from WGN Radio Sports. He does it on my show on Saturdays, and I enjoy your work, Sam. So you are picking NFL games this year. What's that all about?
It's the Westgate Super Contest. We're playing with Team Odd Sharks, and it's a march to $1 million. If we come in first place, we win $1 million. You told me to be better. I heeded your call. We went 4-1 this week, John.
So the idea is you pick five games you feel strongest about, any five games you want to bet on, if you will, in the NFL, and you give us those picks on Saturday. We come back on Monday to see how you did. So tell me the ones you got right.
We got the Bears over the Steelers.
Nice. What was the spread on that? How many points could we give?
Bears plus 7.
Really?
So that was an easy winner.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of us are surprised that the Bears won or didn't lose by more than 7. Obviously, Vegas felt the same way, but you had that one right. Keep going.
Vikings plus 3. They beat the Buccaneers outright.
Good for you.
Atlanta minus 3. The Falcons beat Detroit barely. They won by 4, so we won that.
Controversial close in that game. Keep going.
We'll take it. We had the Redskins plus 3 on Sunday night. They beat the Raiders handily. And we lost the Packers because they only beat the Bengals by a field goal. You were confused. You texted me, nice, we're 4-0. And I said, no, we have to win by more than 8. And they didn't. But, hey, 4-1, we are in 66th place out of 2,700.
All right. Well, you are on the way. That is amazing. You're in 66th place out of 2,700.
We are. We.
And so what percent does that put us in?
We are in the top 5% right now
in
the world.
Okay. So five more games to pick this week and to see how, if you can move up. Boy, how far off from first place are you?
So we have 10.5 points. The leader has 12.5. We're 2 points back.
Oh,
we're two wins, you can say.
But you're in the money, right? Sam, you're in the money now.
No, he is not.
Oh, I thought 5%.
So we're outside the money by literally a half point.
Oh.
God, think about
that,
though. If you had just gotten one or two, if you got two more games right, you would be first place for the million-dollar chase.
71% on the season. 10-4-1. It's been a nice run.
I'm disappointed, but that's okay. Well, keep up the good work, Sam. If I can help you in any way, mostly I've been telling you games, and then you do the opposite. That seems to be my trick.
Right.
So keep up the good work. Anything else you, as a sports guy, are hearing or can help us with on this NFL controversy over the weekend?
As far as what?
I don't care. Any news, any reportage, anybody saying? Or, for instance, has a single player been fired by a team yet?
No, nothing yet. No players have been fired. No coaches have been fired. Nothing has happened. And we talked about this on Saturday, on your Saturday show, when the president made these comments about the NFL and the anthem and all that. He had to have known they would only make more people kneel and more people not come out during the anthem. So
yeah.
I'm not surprised by what happened. I'm just waiting to see exactly how it unfolds. This could be a season-wide issue. I mean, this could happen all season, and that's what, you know, is the most interesting part of it. We don't know when this will end or how long this will go. And,
you bet.
And I think, you know, the longer he continues to challenge people, the more problems he'll have.
Well, the first person to take a knee this weekend was a baseball player. It was a catcher in Major League Baseball for, was it Oakland or one of the teams out west, I think?
Bruce Maxwell, catcher.
By the way, Ed was at the Bears game, I think. Hey, Ed, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. I was at the game, and there were more. It was like going to Milwaukee for a Cubs game. There were Steeler fans throughout the field with your yellow flags and everything else. There were two gentlemen, well, I call them gentlemen, there were two people seated right at the first row, almost directly behind the Steeler bench, and they were yelling at the team something to the effect that you're a bunch of bums because you're not respecting the flag and that, and they just kind of kept at it. They did not use any profanity, at least that I heard. A field supervisor for the security company that runs security for the field came over and said something to them, chastised them, and then he summoned another guy who stood there, another supervisor type of guy, who stood there and looked at him, and it looked to me like they were planning to, you know, eject these guys from the field. Well, then later on, I looked up there, and the two guys were gone. Their seats were empty, and I thought, okay, they must have thrown them out. Well, then, you know, a few minutes later, I looked up there, and the two guys were back, but they had taken their Steelers jerseys and turned them wrong side out, so the numbers that they were wearing were not visible. I guess I'm not sure what their intent was, maybe to make it harder for security to identify
these
them.
These were Steeler fans, though, huh? These were Steelers fans, huh?
Yeah, these were Steelers fans.
Yeah.
And like I said, they were yelling at the team. They did not, as I say, to my knowledge or my hearing, use any profanity or anything, but they call them a bunch of bums for not standing up and monitoring the flag.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, at halftime, I heard that the security people ejected them. And now I'm saying, wait a minute, if the players have freedom of speech to say, do what they did, why did these guys not have freedom of speech to say to them, okay, you're a bunch of bums because you're not respecting the flag?
Yeah.
It's another side of this coin that is just, you know, very, very puzzling and very divisive and everything. I mean, were their rights respected? I don't know.
Jack, I wasn't there, but is it possible that it wasn't what they were saying per se, but the fact that, you know, we've all been to a game where the experience is not so good just because some knucklehead around you is shouting anything, right? Like the umpire's a bum. If he was berating the officials all game long and ruining the experience for everybody, you might wish they'd throw that guy out. Is it possible that it was as much that as what they were saying per se?
I'm not certain. I'm really not certain because, as I said, they did not use profanity. They were, you know, they were right behind the bench, so they were probably, if there were players there, and there were a few at the time, they were in within earshot of them. I don't know that anybody from the Steelers sideline, you know, objected and asked security to come over and quiet them down. But it was obvious that security felt what they were saying was unacceptable, and therefore, you know, they were, these guys were subject to being ejected from the field. Now, I know the back of your ticket gives them license to do things for a number of reasons, but it just, you know, on the same token that the players had freedom to do and say what they did these guys not have the freedom to say what they said?
Yeah, you raised some interesting points there. Jack, thank you for the phone call. Were you at the game, or were you able to go to the game, Sam Panionovich, over the weekend?
Nope, I was able to sit and watch all the games, actually, because I was working, you know, 7 until 12. I got off at about 12:30. We talked about this all morning, though, on Dean's show. But, no, I did not get to go to the game. I usually don't have to work Sunday afternoons. It's nice.
So the experience at the Bears game where the players locked arms, what was your read on that? What were the players saying?
Well, I mean, it was hard to tell exactly what they were saying. I mean, it's just, you know, it's uniformity. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the platform. I mean, they're not speaking mostly for themselves. They're speaking for people that don't have a voice, and I don't have an issue with it. It's peaceful. It's not – I don't even think it's a protest, honestly. I mean, people have been calling it a protest. I guess essentially it is, but I don't mind it at all. I like that they're with each other. I mean, this is a brotherhood. These guys are they're going to war with each other every day, and – you know, you have to respect that.
Yeah, and that's it. Steve Bertrand suggested that they were intentionally vague about what that meant. The president thought it was positive, and other people may have seen it as contrary to the president's views. So maybe they're clever enough to go out there, lock arms that way, and then everybody reads into it what they want. The team has not officially said what the purpose of that stand was.
Well, no, I mean, it hasn't been said exactly what it is, but I mean, it's racial injustice. I mean, that's essentially what the league has been, you know, speaking out against. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to, the racial injustice and the inequalities. And, you know, it stemmed from a lot of, you know, police brutality. That's when Colin Kaepernick started to do this last season.
Yeah. I know you got other things you got to do. Okay, good luck on the games this week. I'll talk to you on Saturday. Maybe we'll bump into you before then, but thanks for saying hi, Sam.
You got it.
WGN Radio Sports and Sam Panionovich. It's 2:22. You know, speaking of the back of the ticket, though, the promo that ran for my show over the weekend, not knowing when I recorded it on Friday that we would be so NFL heavy today, was about Major League Baseball and the fact that on the back of the ticket it says, if a ball hits you in the nose, that's on you. And the big controversy after a child was struck by a ball and somebody at Sox Park was struck again over the weekend or late last week. Maybe we ought to do something to make Major League Baseball parks safer. And I have what I think is the perfect solution to that.
A force field?
That's right. Anti-missile technology will just blast them out with laser beams before they hit people in the stands. No. Now, let me get to that in a minute. And obviously, you want to talk about this NFL story, too. We'll continue on WGN. Sue, this is John. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
What's on your mind?
A good friend of ours was at the Cubs game, I think about three weeks ago, and got hit. He was 20 rows up and got a line drive to his eye. And it shattered his eye, cracked all the bones around his eye, broke his nose. He was in the hospital for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, and he's been back and forth to doctors, surgeries. They don't know if they're going to be able to save the eye. It was awful.
My goodness, I haven't heard about this. I've heard of other stories. So what's happening with all of that?
Well, he had just made the decision to have them remove the eye.
Oh,
and
Lord.
I know, but when the doctor checked, he could see light. So he's been in and out. He did finally have an operation, attaching things, and hopefully he'll be able to see. But he had to lay on his stomach for days, and it's just been a mess since that happened.
How old is this person?
I think he's like close to 60. He was with his older kids. And he said, thank God it wasn't one of my kids.
Yeah.
It's been an awful role.
Who's been paying for all of his medical stuff, do you know?
You know what? I really have no idea about that.
See, this to me, golly, and so this is a 60-year-old guy. People say, well, you got to pay attention during the game. Stop texting during the games.
It wouldn't have made any difference. Not an ounce of difference. It was that fast.
And besides, I don't think it's reasonable to expect 40,000 people to, over the course of 3.5 hours, not have a moment of inattention in the sun.
Absolutely. How do you not do that?
So you look away for a second, the ball hits you in the head. That's not your fault. Nobody wants to be hit in the head. So here's my solution. And people say, oh, my God, we can't put nets up all the way around. Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, you can.
And by the way, when you think of a net, you think of one with the black stitching. I think they should take fishing line. Get twine fishing line, which you can kind of see through, which is will reflect the light more. You can see and just put it up wherever you need to put it up. You don't have to put it around the whole place, but we need to expand the netted area around the ballpark. It's a no-brainer.
Every ballpark. It's awful.
Wow. Sorry to hear the story. Keep us posted on that, Sue. It's nice of you to call. It's 2:29. Let's just sneak in one more here about the NFL and all of this. Hey, Jack, this is John. You're on the air.
Yes, John. Good afternoon to you. You mentioned a little bit earlier that there was no NFL players that were fired or let go over the weekend.
Yeah.
And my hypothetical question to you is what if Cooper was the only Bear that did not stand during the national anthem and he took a knee? And he was the one who did not give 100% on the return of the blocked field goal.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are okay if he... he got fired anyway.
but my point would be, how do you think the NFL would look at it? How do you think the fans would look at it? And how do you think the Bears players would look at something like that?
You're saying what if he was the only one that took a knee during the game and then also did badly in that one play?
Exactly, and he was let go today.
Yeah. I don't have an answer to that. I'll have to think about that. Thanks for the call. But that will be an interesting moment, and I'm not wishing it on anybody. But if one of the owners decides that they are going to fire a player because of their conduct like this, a disrespectful display to the flag, then we'll see what's more harmful to them, what hurts ratings more, right? The fact that some of the players are disrespectful or that some of the owners don't respect their free speech. So while we are maybe on the eve of, as what somebody described earlier, as the stupidest Armageddon ever, maybe that won't happen. Steve will continue to follow North Korea and the president and other news in the newsroom. We are also on the eve of the worst day in market history. It was on October 19th, 1987, that the Dow lost over 500 points. Were as a percentage at the same loss today, we would be down something like 5,000 points, actually maybe even more. Can you imagine if all of a sudden your 401k was 22% lower? And yet, listening to my voice now, you may well remember that day. And here we come up on the anniversary. None other than Diana Enriquez, who wrote about Bernie Madoff and the Wizard of Lies, has tackled this topic, and she's in our studio. Welcome back to the show. It's nice to meet you in person.
Wonderful to be here, John.
Congratulations on telling another great financial story, which I think is the most difficult task. Finances are difficult for us. And then to pull out of that a good yarn, that's two jobs in one.
Thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it. But, you know, really, the history itself made my task very easy because the 1987 crash is a story of cliffhangers and 11th hour rescues and accidental heroes. I mean, if you couldn't make this story exciting, you really should check for a pulse.
Okay, so what did happen? Why did the market fall 500 plus points in one day?
Well, let me dodge that question. Let's do the famous pivot here, because everyone always wants to know, why did the market fall? And while certainly that was an epic crash, a single day loss of almost 25%. I was more concerned with what that loss did to the financial
structure of the country. It's one thing for a market to fall. It's another thing for it to almost fall apart. And that's what happened in 1987. And it happened not because of any easily identifiable villain, but because of some tectonic changes that were occurring in the marketplace in the years before the crash that were neglected, ignored, and misunderstood.
Computerization, insurance products.
Yes, computerization, academic theories for reducing risk that turned out to do exactly the opposite. The rise of supersized investors. For the first time, pension funds were wading into the stock market, and they were these gigantic rhinoceroses wading in. And for the first time, a market crash didn't stay in its own market. So it exposed how balkanized our regulatory system was. I say in the book, I'm persuasive that this really has to be thought of as the first modern market crash. It was unlike any of the previous market crashes in our history because it involved financial derivatives for the first time. It involved this balkanized regulatory system. It involved these gigantic investors using computer-driven strategies in a herd-like way. Now, that had never happened before. But those factors, some or all of them, have been involved in every crash we've had since 87, including, of course, devastatingly in 2008.
Yeah. How does that work? And do you mind the fact that some people who trade are trading on the margins? They never really are putting any capital into the thing. And if it goes up a little bit, they buy and sell in microseconds, and it's I'm not sure that they're, good for the economy or America.
I do raise concerns, particularly in the epilogue of my book, John, about what kind of market we've inherited from the past 30 years. I mean, the crash of 87 was really like a crystal ball. It showed us the future, if we would look at it and learn from it. And that future is what we're living in right now. The markets are heavily dominated by giant institutions. They are heavily dominated by institutions pursuing very similar strategies. So everybody runs over to the same side of the boat, and you just hope it doesn't capsize. It is extremely dependent on derivatives that have not been tested in a serious market struggle. So I can understand that the high-frequency trading mentality, makes it seem very much like a casino. I think we've lost something when we don't look to our capital markets, our stock markets, as a place where new ideas can be financed, where healthy growth can be financed. That's what they were designed for. And 87 showed that we were starting down a road where that role was going to come under increasing pressure. And had we looked at it clearly then, maybe we would have wound up at a different place.
You think if we had learned from 87 that 2008 would not have happened?
I think it certainly would have been.
Because that was about the housing crisis, wasn't it?
It was about the housing crisis, except that the fragility of the housing crisis got incorporated into asset-backed securities that became the basis for a host of financial derivatives. You think of it, 87, they had new financial derivatives, computer-driven by giant institutional investors. Same thing in 08. Untested financial derivatives, they were called credit default swaps then, instead of S&P 500 futures back in 87. But it's still a marketplace that is hurtling along at a breakneck speed. And what really worries me is that we've still got a 20th century regulatory machine trying to keep up with this 21st century market.
Should we have more government intervention or regulation? I mean, is that the job of the government to safeguard these markets?
It's certainly the job of the government to understand these markets. And I think that's the gap. The understanding of the forces that have been unleashed in a market is what really went wrong in 87.
What was the trigger, though, on October 19th, 1987?
Well, as you know from the book, John, it was really, it had been a month in which every day was like the worst day ever. The first week in October 1987 was the worst week in market history, and traders went home from the New York Stock Exchange and said, whew, we were due for a correction. This was really a brutal one, but now it's over. And then the next week was dramatically worse. On the Friday of that week, the Dow closed down more than 100 points for the first time in its history. That would be the equivalent of 1,000 points today. And stunned traders said, oh my God, now surely it's over. It was the worst day in Wall Street history that Friday. And then on Monday, we had a new worst day in history.
How could they be so wrong? And then it was fantastically worse. It was down 500 and how many points?
508 points.
Was there no circuit breaker back then?
Nope, there were no circuit breakers. There was no way to stop the decline. There were just nowhere near enough buyers to absorb the amount of selling that was going on.
So at the end of the month, the market was down how much percentage-wise?
Well, from its peak to the end of that month, it was down more than 30%.
My goodness. And how long did it take for us to recover from that?
To get back to the August peak. I mean, if you'd put all your nest egg into the stock market in August of 1987, it took you 2 years.
Okay, but that's not so bad. In fact, some people say this was the crash without consequence. What do you say about that?
I say those people have not read the history. I mean, that's just an example of the kind of market amnesia that worries me and other financial writers so much. I mean, inevitably, amnesia sets in and you forget your past mistakes and then repeat them. And that's what I think that reflects. People remember it as a rosy kind of, one and done. You know, it was a bad day, but we got over it quickly. And it was almost the worst day ever, and worse than we knew. That's what struck me as I researched this book. It's one thing that we don't remember how bad we learned it was then. We didn't know really how bad it was, and it was far worse than we knew even then, because behind the scenes, regulators were
juggling hands. Right, it wasn't the loss, it was the weakness in the structure itself.
Absolutely, it was the fear that firms were going to fail.
So are we vulnerable to the same sort of single-day crash today? Could that happen again?
There are, as you point out, John, so wisely, circuit breakers now that kick in automatically and will slow down a plummeting marketplace. Not stop it, but slow it down a bit. The problem is that we don't have just one or two or five or six marketplaces today. We've got more than five dozen places you can trade stocks. Dark pools where kind of members-only clubs that you can join and trade stocks. So the market now is as fragmented as the regulatory system is, and a circuit breaker is going to be less effective in that environment.
Well, that's bad news. But here's my question for you. I have to pause, come back, and answer this, and that is the market's down a little bit today, like 50 points or so, I think Steve said, but still, it's 22,000. Can you believe that? Do you have anything to say about the next correction, irrespective of what happened in 87 or 08, but just the natural ebb and flow of the market. Where do you think we are right now? In a minute on WGN. Diane Enriquez, the best-selling author, The Wizard of Lies, and now this book about 1987, which has a very long title. I left my copy at home. Let me read it for you. It's A First-Class Catastrophe, The Road to Black Monday, The Worst Day in Wall Street History. By the way, she's speaking in Oak Brook at the Women's Club. Run out and get tickets. Oh, wait, you can't. That's sold out. But the book, if it enjoys the same sort of success her others have, will be a New York Times bestseller and will once again set the standard for understanding a complicated financial topic. And this one matters because not only is it a fascinating story and has a lot of Chicago connections, but if we don't learn the lessons from that, we are doomed. So we'll finish this conversation in just a minute. By the way, I'll bet you know someone who's getting older and wants to stay in their home. I'll bet that you're concerned about their safety if they do. 1 in 3 Americans will fall this year over the age of 65. I'd like to introduce you to the folks at Remodel Direct. They do one thing. Listen to this. They specialize in making homes safer and more comfortable to age in. Remodel Direct, Chicago company. They serve all of Chicagoland. They're certified living-in-place specialists. They walked through my folks' house. They found a lot of mistakes we were making. They're making my mom and dad's home safer for them to live in. And you know who really appreciates that? Their adult children. My siblings and I are like, oh, that's a good thing. And I know it would be good for you and your family, too. They bring their showroom to your home. They give you factory direct prices. This is a good idea. I want you to call them at 888-70-DIRECT, 888-70-DIRECT. This is Remodel Direct, 888-70-DIRECT. It's 254. All right, Diane Enriquez, so are you worried about the markets right now? I don't mean to be. Maybe I should not. Do we have some sort of, 2,000-point correction in our near future?
Well, I couldn't tell you, and if I could tell you, I wouldn't, because I would be quietly, setting up a position that would allow me to profit from that. We're certainly going to have a market correction. Markets do not go endlessly up, as we say in the biz. Trees don't grow to the sky, so there will be a market correction. What I'm concerned about is how we respond to it. I think we're in a period of intense euphoria right now.
What are we happy about?
Well, tax cuts, possibly, for corporations.
That's interesting. A lot of the things that I thought were driving the market have not come to fruition. We don't even have a health care bill.
And I think the market's patience will not be endless. However, right now, there still seems to be enough of a belief that that this administration will deliver. But what I'm more concerned about the administration delivering, John, is a calm voice from the cockpit when we do hit that turbulence. Because if you look at the 87 story, there was a bit of a vacuum in Washington at the moment of Black Monday. President Reagan was distracted. His wife was having breast cancer surgery. And that vacuum became louder and scarier. Fortunately, people stepped into it. John Phelan at the New York Stock Exchange, Alan Greenspan knew at the Fed, Jerry Corrigan at the New York Fed. And they were that voice that said, ladies and gentlemen, we're experiencing some turbulence, but we'll sail through it. So I ask myself, who steps up to that microphone now? And I would be more reassured if I could see the financial officials in the Trump administration acting like the kind of people you would take some comfort from and some calming advice from. I think the White House and the Treasury Department need to think about who the A-team is going to be on the day when it comes.
Do you not have a lot of confidence in Steve Mnuchin?
Well, he certainly has Wall Street background, and in fact, his father plays a small cameo role in the 1987 crash.
As does Chicago play a not small role in
Very
your story. Just give me a minute, and then we have to go on the Chicago connection to this story.
Chicago changed the world when the Chicago Mercantile Exchange introduced S&P 500 futures contracts in April of 1982. And it's not going back. I mean, the world before 1982 is gone with the wind. So Chicago created financial derivatives that were widely adopted by institutional investors that became a mainstay of traders all around the world. And by doing so, they coupled together the futures market and the stock market in ways that were poorly understood then and only slightly better understood now. Yeah. But Chicago had some of the giants of the futures industry here, people like Leo Melamed and Bill Brodsky, who got Chicago through the crash by the skin of its teeth, just as John Phelan and Jerry Corrigan did in New York. So these are accidental heroes, people who went out to find their fortune and met monsters and managed to evade them and escape them and come back and tell the tale.
A first-class catastrophe. What a great title. The Road to Black Monday, the worst day in Wall Street history, is available everywhere now?
Yes. I even saw it in the airport.
Is it going to be an HBO project like your last one was?
I will be very surprised if that happens. But
you do have some interesting characters here. And if anybody could write a page turner about the markets, it's Diana Enriquez. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming
always
into our studio.
Always a pleasure to be here.
You're lucky if you're in Oak Brook tomorrow night, you'll get a chance to see her there too. Okay, it's a couple seconds after 3 o'clock, so I've kind of eaten into your time there, Anna DeVlantis. How are you?
That's okay. Pretty good. Happy Monday to you.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Thanks a lot, Donald Trump. Best weekend of the year.
Ruined the weekend.
Ruined!
It was a beautiful.
God, I sound like Ro now. I'm getting all wound up.
See, this is contagious, whatever he has. But we'll be seeing Ro in just a few minutes here. It's, Bears win. That was huge. That was a nice big weekend. But the focus, of course, on something else in the NFL. And we've got an ABC News reporter stationed outside Phoenix where Monday Night Football is going to be tonight. And to weigh in there, kind of check the mood, the pulse, and also see what the response will be.
Boy, I was so interested in what all the players and teams were going to do yesterday.
I
wanted to watch just the start of the games, just to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, wasn't it? What's your read on the interlocked arms standing?
I think that's to say I support our brothers who want to kneel.
Okay,
and I'm going to kind of be in the middle here by showing patriotism and the support of our flag and nation, and then support for our teammates.
You know, imagine,
can you do both?
I think if you could, that was it. And can you just imagine what a complicated meeting that was for the owners, the executives, the PR guy for every team, like the Steelers and the Bears. Steelers go, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Damn it, we got to come up with, what are we going to do?
And let's do something and be united is what Pittsburgh decided. And then Alejandro Villanueva decided, because he served three tours in Afghanistan and he's Army Ranger, he chose to stand. And now he's the best-selling jersey, but he's also receiving heat saying, why didn't you
stay with
stand
your team,
beside your team?
Let's not beat the individuals up who are acting on the
don't think we should either,
their own
especially
convictions.
Him when he's...
So you guys are going to do some of that. What else are you doing?
We've got a lot coming up. Tom Skilling will tell us about the record-setting temperatures and weather that we've had.
Remember to ask him this question.
Okay.
So we set a record again today in the last 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been a time where we set a record high more than 6 days in a row? Think about that. I mean,
any period of time?
Have we ever broken the record 6 consecutive or more days?
Oh, I would say so, yeah. But we'll ask him about that, how, you know, unprecedented it is. He says for the end of September, of course, anywhere near this kind of heat is. But
here's my point, Anna. Like, say it's August, mm-hmm. and August 21st and 22nd were really super hot.
Mm-hmm.
But then usually as you quit breaking the records, that you hit that peak and it comes down.
Because it's more seasonal.
We've had a 6-day peak.
Yeah.
It's for 6 days in a row we've broken the record. This is remarkable for that as much as it is the individual temperatures. I think the 6 days is impressive. Anyway.
All right, we'll ask him about that, and then also about the swing in temperatures and when we can expect more warm weather and when it's going to cool down as well. OB is here to talk Bears. Go Bears. What team was that? Did we recognize our Bears? I mean, wow.
Yeah, no kidding.
Happy about that. And I'm sure Rokan, who just stepped in the studio, saw his beloved Bears.
Most proud and least proud I have ever been of that institution.
Oh, I know.
All at the same time.
I know. That one almost touchdown.
Oh,
is that it? Was that what pissed you off the most? Was that?
Got a lot of people angry.
We'll talk about the whole, you know, kneeling and all that other crap. We just talk about football. Can we stay to football for just a second?
Yeah.
That has happened before in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, in the Super Bowl 1 year.
Right, with bad results, of course.
It never goes well. All right.
From high school. Every high school coach? How many high school coaches were watching that
game? We almost got out of this, Anna.
I know.
Sorry.
I know.
Rose here. I got to get out of the way.
All right.